D&D Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Who are they?
The Guardians of the Wheels.
The Staggering Dragon presents Guardians of the Wills, a Star Wars podcast. And now here are your hosts, Neil and Dustin.
Hey everybody, I'm Dustin.
And I'm Neil, and welcome to the Guardians of the Wills podcast. So today we're going to talk about Ambush at Krillia, but before we get there, Dustin's got a special message about the D20 Radio Network.
That's right. Of course you all know by now if you're regular listener of the Guardians of the Wills podcast. We're on the D20 Radio Network. You can find that at d20radio.com. If you go there, you will find, if you click on the little podcast link, there's a whole bunch of really good podcasts that you guys can listen to. There's a lot of live play, RPG episodes. There's a lot of education about different games and stuff like that. There's basically, what I'm trying to say is there's a variety of podcasts that are on the D20 Radio Network that you're bound to find something you like. So I encourage everybody to go to d20radio.com if you haven't already. Go check it out. Try some of the different podcasts, see what you like. Keep coming back, and that's all I got. d20radio.com.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Okay, we're going to move on to our Cantina Talk.
We're wanted men. I have the death sentence on 12 systems.
I'll be careful.
You'll be dead.
Pull up a stool and grab a glass of blue milk. It's time for Cantina Talk.
First thing in that, we're going to talk about maybe an announcement about some conventions.
Yeah, that's right. We just talked in our last episode that we were going to be at Planet Comic Con here in Kansas City coming up. Well, big shocker. I don't know. Have you heard that there's some kind of coronavirus?
Just now.
Well, I assume it comes from drinking Corona, the beer.
Yeah. It's the way it sounds, judging from all the stuff I've seen on Facebook.
Yeah. And apparently you have to buy toilet paper.
Yeah.
For what comes next.
Toilet paper is how you combat it.
Right. I don't know.
You shove it in all of your orifices, orify. I don't know how you say it. And it keeps it out.
So anyway, big shocker, Planet Comic Con got postponed, so we're obviously not going to be there. They're supposed to come up with a rescheduling announcement here pretty quick, like within the next week. So hopefully we will be at the rescheduled time. We'll let you guys know when that is if you want to come out and roll some dice and play some games with us. We'll let you know.
I did see something funny. I don't know where I saw it, but it was from Twitter, but it was a picture. I didn't see it on Twitter. I'm not that smart. But somebody had said, oh, they talking about canceling or postponing E3. Said, yeah, of course they're going to postpone E3. They're going to get all those sweaty, disgusting gamers in one room, and that thing's going to turn into the T-virus before you know it. He might be right. And we don't need that.
That's true. Nobody needs that.
Nobody needs that is right. Okay, moving on with our Cantina Talk. We haven't really talked about it on here anyway, but there's a new Clone Wars episodes out. I believe, are we on our fourth one? Is that our fourth one or fifth one? Was that our fourth one?
It's number four.
Yeah, so the arc we're in right now, I don't know how long it'll last or anything like that. It's about the Bad Batch and all that stuff.
I think this was it.
Was this it? It probably was. I guess they did kind of leave at the end of the episode, taking Echo with them.
Yep.
Which was pretty cool. So that was kind of, you're right. This is probably the end of it. But I guess, what are your, you don't have to get real into it or anything, but what are your impressions of these first few episodes of the Clone Wars?
The two things that I can say that come to the top of my head before anything else is, one is the animation is light years ahead of
top notch
anything else. I mean, it is absolutely fantastic. And it's not just the animation. I can tell in like a lot of the sequences and camera angles and stuff like that. Like, if you want to say the way they're quote unquote shooting the episode.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
It is cool.
And then the other thing I wanted to say is the Bad Batch themselves feels like a role-playing game group.
It does, and I just kind of want them to go ahead and announce that there will be a spin-off series. It's just following their adventures that have been going on throughout the Clone Wars. I'm in 100% agreement. Already big fan of Clone Wars, like you, I assume, are as well, and probably like a lot of people that would listen to this would be. And this has just been fantastic. It's been nice to get it. I wish we'd just get them all at once, obviously, but that's just being selfish. You know, they can release them every week if they want. This particular arc has been really fun, and I think that's been one of the best things, always been one of the best things about Clone Wars is when they do their little arcs, and they're always so good, it seems like.
Yeah.
And they just have a good feel to them, anything about it. It's been good. I like it a lot. And of course, I'll say, as much as I've liked this arc, I would like to go ahead and see Ahsoka now. I want her to be there now.
You ready?
Just go ahead and take over the show. But I get that it's called the Clone Wars, not the Ahsoka show. We all know that. But either way, I'm ready to see some of that action happening again. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that. This probably will not be the last time we talk about that. I'm sure if nothing else, we'll talk about it when it's over. But I imagine we're going to bring that up again once or twice between now and May, I think, is when the last episode is. I'm not sure when, but it's sometime in May. So moving past that, we're going to move on to our prime focus this week.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
It's time for this episode's Prime Focus.
Our prime focus is Ambush at Corellia by Roger McBride Allen. It was released in February of 1995. Takes place sometime. Does anybody care when it takes place? I don't know. No, it takes place about 9 years after the Thrawn trilogy. So that just kind of gives you, as we're moving forward with these stories, let that kind of sink into you. 18 years after the Battle of Yavin, but 9 years after the Thrawn trilogy. So kind of keep that in mind, I guess, as to what's going on. And Dustin's going to read us the opening crawl.
I am. Star Wars. Ambush at Corellia.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Roger McBride Allen. A trade summit on Corellia brings Han Solo back to the homeworld he left many years before. Arriving on the distant planet with Leia, their children, and Chewbacca, Han finds Corellia overrun with agents of the New Republic intelligence, and finds himself part of a deceptive plan whose aim not even he understands. One thing is clear, the five inhabited worlds of the sector are on the brink of civil war, and the once peaceful coexistence of the three leading races, human, Solonian, and Drawlin, has come to an end. Suddenly, all that Han, Leia, and others of the Alliance have fought for is threatened, as jammer ships block all communication with Luke Skywalker in the outside universe. Han and Leia find themselves trapped on a world about to explode in violence, unless they can meet a fanatical rebel leader's impossible demands.
Do you think that equipment that was jamming the communications was also outside Roger McBride Allen's house, and he had no way of transmitting this book to anybody else before it was released, and that's why it's so incredibly boring, because no one was able to tell him that it sucks. Maybe we figured it out.
Hey.
Foreshadowing. Anyway, moving on. Now, you have to wake up after listening to that extremely exciting opening crawl, because you're going to have to force yourself to stay awake for the excitement that will ensue. What's going to happen first in this book?
We're we're going to break down the plot line, the two very short plot lines for this book incredibly quickly right now.
You're welcome, world.
So, plot line number one, the Solo family. We're talking about Han, Leia, Jaina, Jason, Anakin, and Chewbacca.
And Chewbacca Solo.
Because he's pretty much part of the family.
He is.
So he counts. So what do they do? How do you want to start off a book about Star Wars and send everybody into just a page-flipping frenzy?
Just make it a page-turner?
Yeah.
Send them to a trade summit.
Send them to a trade summit on Corellia.
Absolutely. Now, don't think it's going to be that boring, because before they even go to the trade summit, Han Solo gets approached by New Republic intelligence. And he's asked to run interference so that they can get more agents on Corellia to get a feel for the political climate. Neat. All I can think, I don't know. I just don't even, it's just kind of like, all right, this is pretty cool. How's he going to run interference? And he's supposed to run interference by just being himself, apparently, which is fine. Yeah. I get it. They're going to attract attention. But they couldn't have picked any other time to try to insert agents onto Corellia. I mean,
here's the other thing is the interesting part about this plot isn't Han Solo and his kids having a good old sightseeing touristy time on Corellia. The interesting part would have been to talk about the intelligence agents that are going undercover trying to figure out what's going on. Not Han Solo and his kids running around like a bunch of idiots.
That would be a cool story that could take place completely without the Solos in it.
Right.
I get that wasn't going to happen, but it could be a cool story.
Yeah.
And with them doing their spying and whatnot or inserting themselves in there, it'd be really cool if it was like some sort of thing where they did that, and then when the Solos eventually got there, they didn't even know that the people they were interacting with were also New Republic agents. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. He's supposed to run interference. We know that much.
But little does Han know, he's being spied upon by an agent of the Human League. Now, I'm not talking about the British 80s pop band, the Human League.
I got to change my notes.
They're not in this book. I'm talking about the Human League from Corellia, which I'm assuming we get a little bit of information about them towards the end of the book, but we're still not real clear, 100% about their motivations and all of that stuff. And they refer to as their leader as quote unquote the hidden leader until we find out who that is, pretty much at the end of the book.
Is it a shocking twist?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so they've talked about before in Star Wars in these books that Han doesn't really talk too much about Corellia. Had never really gone into detail about it, but he does talk about the fact that when he gets there, it's all run down now compared to what he remembers. All right, I guess. What else would it be? It's like, all right, that I feel like that's not, I don't know. Moving through this book or this part of this plot line of the book is, it's really like, it's like running through mud. It's just real slow. But anyway, Han and Leia do learn that there is a lot of unrest in this sector between the various species. Probably a lot of that spurred on by the fact that there's multiple species, and then there's a thing called the Human League, which is just, that seems pretty racist.
Right.
To
they're
me.
Pretty much the white supremacists of Star Wars. They even go so far as to wear armbands on their arms. So,
you're right. They do that, though. So basically, they're seeing the civil unrest and realize that there's probably a civil war that's going to happen, too. So that's going on. And then we get another weird moment with the kids. The kids discover a secret chamber on Corellia that no one else has ever discovered before. Well, I shouldn't even say the kids. Anakin discovers a secret chamber that no one else on Corellia has ever seen before.
Right.
And in our little notes we have, Dustin wrote, will this come into play later in the trilogy? I'm going to say no. What do you think?
It better.
No, I agree. But it feels like some of those types of things, it's just like, also remember that Anakin's really good with the Force. He found a chamber that no one else has found. It's super important, but we're not going to talk about it ever again.
They definitely don't talk about it ever again in this book.
They don't. I'm sure they will later, though. It's going to happen. Moving on from that, though, we get to see the hidden leader appear on a holovid and explain that if his demands were not met, that he has, I guess, he's going to trigger multiple supernova explosions within the sector. So generally, if you tell a group of people that they're going to start blowing up, that you're going to start blowing up suns, it's going to cause riots.
Right.
And that's pretty much what happens at that point. And then, within all this going on, Han gets to be captured. Do we get to meet the hidden leader at this point?
Like, towards the very end, we get an explanation of who it is, right?
Yeah, I want to make sure I didn't say that and have that be in the second book, because I read them right away back to back.
Yeah, it's at the very end of this one that we get to see and know who the hidden leader is.
It is Star Wars is the smallest galaxy in the world, going to the smallest planet on Earth. Well, on Earth. In that galaxy, they're going to a small planet. Obviously, the leader's going to be Han's cousin, because everybody's related to everybody. So we meet him, and it's Thrakken Sol Solo, however you say his name.
Right.
But either way, Han's captured, gets to meet his cousin again, who you find out sounds exactly like him, I guess. Chewie and the kids escape to the planet Drawl in the Falcon. Leia is still trapped on Krillia awaiting demands.
Right.
And we'll find out what happens to her in the next book. Moving on to our second major plot line of this thrill ride. Is Lando and Luke. Lando and Luke also have to have an adventure to be part of the story, I guess. I don't know. To be allowed to make money off this book. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
So they could get their royalties?
Yeah, I don't know how royalties work for fictional characters. But they had to be part of it. It's in their contract. So Luke gets told to go by Mon Moth. By Mon Moth, but to go be Lando's friend and go on with his adventure, because he's going to have to learn how to be a politician.
Right.
And that's kind of weird. And Lando must have some super important thing he's going to do, probably, I guess. No, Lando's decided that you marry for love and only for love. And he wants, never mind. Lando's figured out that you marry for money, it turns out. So he's put together a list of women that would meet his financial criteria and wants Luke to travel the galaxy with him so that he can just, I don't know, get in the door easier because he's with a hero, I guess.
Right.
All right. But basically, Lando says he's going to marry, he wants to find a wealthy woman, marry her, and use her wealth to invest and make them both even more money. Really, really. Way to build
so
a strong, strong relationship. But that's okay. Luke says yes, because I guess he was told to.
And he literally has nothing else to do.
Yeah, he doesn't. Doesn't have anything else to do. He's busy being a drain on society. So they go. This is it. They're going to go find love. First place they go to, Lando's all ready to make it happen. She's all ready to make it happen, and then we find out she's a life witch.
Right.
So that wasn't going to work out, but do you know, do you want to tell everybody what a life witch is if they don't already know?
Yeah, so this woman takes husbands, and we learn that if Lando would have accepted, it would have been husband number 50, and she generally takes someone of ailing health or something like that, who doesn't have a whole lot of time left to live. And she provides them with a quality life. She's rich, obviously, because that's what Lando's looking for. And she provides them with a quality life. She said it usually lasts around 5 years and then they die. But what she does is she takes I was never quite clear on this, exactly what was in it for her.
Well, I think she gets his essence is the way I kind of understood it.
Yeah, it's like a kind of like his life force or something.
Yeah, she's going to get his life force in the end is the way I kind of understood, way I took it, because
yeah,
she already obviously has plenty of money because she's built up wealth throughout time. And it was, and I think maybe she liked the companionship too, because it wasn't right. supposed to be an evil thing. It was supposed to be a mutually beneficial thing.
Right.
I mean, you got love and companionship for the last 5 years of your life because you're going to die anyway. And in fact, I think it's even kind of explained. It's supposed to be, you're supposed to kind of be on death's door because it literally yeah. extends yeah. your life by 5 years, slash would end in 5 years if you wanted to go as a 25-year-old person, I guess, and go be done when you're 30, you could do that too. But the idea is more like you're on death's door because of old age or sickness or whatever. Yeah.
And she was surprised that Lando was asking her yeah. for this because he was a healthy person.
Because he was a healthy, middle-aged man.
Right.
Or how, I don't know how old he would be at this time. But it's interesting.
As you can already tell, this works into the plot a lot.
It does. It's not filler at all.
I'm saying that facetiously.
It is. It's not filler at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Really, there's really a point. Why is this in the book? What are we doing here?
It's in the book purely for the reason because you can't have the first place they go be the one he marries. I mean, like anybody reading the book was like, oh, this is it. He found the one. That was easy. Yeah. Moving on to the next adventure. All right. Well, yeah, whatever. So they're still rooting, tooting, scooting around looking for a bride. And then whatever. Eventually, they're going to go to the Krillian sector anyway. Because that's what the guy wrote in the book, is that they were going to do that. Because Lando wants to go to the trade summit anyhow.
Right.
So they try to go there. They're blocked by an interdiction field. So they're going to head back to Coruscant to get help because they feel like the sector's in trouble because, of course, there's no communication out.
Yeah.
So they don't know what's happening. And that's a kind of the end of the book.
Pretty much.
It is. It's actually, you know, the other thing is I don't have a copy. I got mine from the library. You have it. How many pages is it? Isn't it like, it's like 220 or so. It's a pretty short book.
No, it's actually about 300.
Is it closer to three? Maybe the second one's shorter.
308.
Okay, never mind. That thing. God darn. That was awful. 308 pages I suffered through that, huh? All right. Never mind. Okay. That's the end of the book. That's the story. Nothing happens. To be continued.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat. Can't wait for the second
one. Yeah, me too. God darn. All right, we can recap it here real quick. The Solos go to Corellia, get told to be that the NRI wants to put some people undercover, run interference. They're going for a trade summit, see what's going on. Shockingly, a bunch of crap's going down, and they're going to be in the middle of it. Luke and Lando are going out bride hunting because this galaxy has all this technology, but Tinder hasn't been invented yet, I guess, there. So they can't use that, so they have to actually physically go places to meet people. What a joke. Doesn't work out. Shocker. Then they're also going to go to Corellia because it's convenient. Can't get there. They're going to head back to Coruscant. And then To Be Continued comes up on the screen. The end. Okay. What did you find interesting about the book? That's the question. That's the next thing we need to get to. What did you find interesting about the book?
Okay. I have some things. I just real quick, because there's not a whole bunch in here.
Not.
These are things. Some of these are just some Legends versus Disney canon mm-hmm. things that I found, and then some others are just some interesting little tidbits. The first thing is Luke gives Leia a lightsaber, and he pretty much deems that she's a Jedi Knight.
Yes.
The color of the lightsaber is ruby red.
It is. That's actually one of the few interesting things I was going to bring up, too.
Yeah, so if you go back to the beginning of our podcast when we're talking about the Thrawn trilogy, I'm pretty sure at some point in there we thought Leia's lightsaber was red and it wasn't. Well, this is probably why, because down the road in Legends, I'm assuming she still has this lightsaber and that's what she uses. So that's probably where that came into our heads in the first place.
Probably.
Regardless, it is a red lightsaber.
It is.
So
ruby red.
The whole aspect of only Sith having red lightsabers obviously hasn't been established yet. And the other thing, going even further than that, that Disney, in the Disney canon, that they totally changed was the bleeding of the Force crystal that the Sith do to make their lightsabers turn red.
To make it red, yes.
So I found that really interesting, and that I also found it interesting because of the Rise of Skywalker, when we get to see in the Disney canon Leia's lightsaber and all that mm-hmm. stuff, and Rey takes the two lightsabers and buries them at the homestead. But all that stuff's going on. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
A few other things. I wrote down quote-unquote peacetime stories. There's kind of a hard thing to navigate as an author right now in Legends when the Empire's basically been defeated. Mm-hmm. You can only bring back Imperial remnants so many times before it gets boring.
Yeah.
So what do you do? What are you writing about when there's peace in the galaxy? Like, what is going on? So we get stuff like this where we're trying to manufacture some kind of conflict for our heroes to go take care of. There's better ways to manufacture conflicts that we'll get to through Legends. This was not a good one.
So far. This is only the first
so far. Book. That's true. That's true.
In what was planned to be a trilogy.
Right.
So,
and I haven't read this trilogy, and I don't think you've read this trilogy.
No,
either.
And I still haven't read the third one. I've only read the first two so far.
So, I mean, it could theoretically get better. The first book wasn't all that great, but
maybe it was just all set up.
The peacetime story thing, I think, is kind of a hard thing to do as an author in this part of Star Wars.
I agree.
So, that all that being said, whatever.
Yep.
Okay. Few more things I want to get to. Hyperspace travel times in Legends versus hyperspace travel times in The Rise of Skywalker. And I just want to throw this out there because in our Rise of Skywalker review, one of the only negative things I wanted to say was that I felt like the hyperspace travel times were a little too plot convenient
yeah.
and incredibly fast.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking within seconds.
They're where they need to be.
That's not how hyperspace travel works in Star Wars. I'm sorry. I understand that's Disney canon now because J.J. Abrams made it that way. No. That's not how it works. I'm sorry. That's way too plot convenient. That's too easy for a writer. It's just bullcrap. Because in Legends, we have time and time again the aspect of hyperspace travel times. And when they're traveling from Coruscant to the Carillion sector, it takes days,
yeah.
plural, to get there. You don't just hit the hyperspace button. It's not like walking through a portal or something like that where you just like are there.
They're just there now.
Like they did in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know? So that's one thing I wanted to bring up that always gets under my skin about some of the new stuff. It shouldn't take 2 seconds to get to a different planet. That is a writing cop-out.
Oh.
The last thing I want to talk about is Anakin being set up to be the most powerful of the Solo children.
It is set up a lot.
They kind of beat you over the head with it yeah. in this book particularly about how much Anakin can tap into the Force.
They do in the Crystal Star, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're getting this buildup of Anakin's going to be something big time. So that was kind of the interesting things I wanted to talk about. How about you? What did you find, if anything, interesting about this book?
The most interesting, the thing I really actually wanted to bring up was the color of the lightsaber. And when I thought about that, it kind of made me giggle just because that's what I came up with was the lightsaber, and that's about it. Because I couldn't get into the book. I struggled. It was one of those books where I reread pages a lot because I was apparently reading it, but I don't remember reading that page. You know, you start mind starts wandering off.
Right.
And that's what it is. I don't know. I think you hit something there with the whole Star Wars adventures during peacetime. How do you do that? And I think it just gets me when our core group of heroes has to always stumble upon a crisis to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't know what you do about that, because they got to stumble on something to solve. And if they didn't stumble on it and the New Republic just figured it out, it doesn't make sense for them to send Han and Luke and Leia to fix everything either, even though they probably just would, just because that's what they would do. So I guess I agree with you. That is kind of interesting, and only that it would be really difficult to think of things to have them do in that time frame. But I don't know. It is what it is. And I think you could have Luke stumble upon adventures just because he's out searching Jedi history and going to various planets and lone gunmen saving people in the West. I don't know what it would be. I think you could find plenty of things, but just them always being at the epicenter of stumbling upon things is kind of weird. Okay, that felt like we already talked about it, but what didn't you like about the book?
The peacetime stories. No, there's that. I think the thing that really stands out to me the most is Lando's weird-ass scheme to go find a rich woman to marry.
Feels outdated.
Well, that, yes, most definitely. But what is the point of this being in the book at all?
I don't know.
Other than to give them something to do.
Give them, like that's how they're, it was in their contract.
Jeez.
And they need the royalties to move on.
It's like, I don't know. I could have absolutely done without it. I felt like it was a 100% waste of time.
Yeah. As far as what I didn't like about the book, I mean, most of it, I guess. I don't know. There's just the whole Lando looking for love thing. Not really looking for love, looking for money. It's like, all right. He's a wheeler and a dealer, I guess. And then the Solo spending their time in the traits. I mean, I don't know. It's just the whole dadgum thing is just not very interesting so far. My hope is that it's the first book of a trilogy, and it's the first book of a trilogy that was planned. And the only reason I keep saying that is because it was planned is because they didn't just write this book and decide, hey, we should continue that story. No, it's one story that they've split up into three acts, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So maybe this is just all set up and it's going to get really exciting about after that. But I think part of it is this book is supposed to have a bunch of political, or to me, it seems like it's supposed to have a bunch of political intrigue to it, and there's just not, doesn't feel very politically intriguing, I guess.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of a lot of things about the book, so I guess that's what I didn't like about it, most of it. Well, I just asked you, you said there was 308 pages. What I didn't like about the book was about 306 of them. So I guess that's the only way I could come up with it.
The only thing that you really get as far as the political entry goes is there's this idea that since the Empire left and there's like this space to fill with the Empire being gone of the stability and stuff like this is why things are kind of shaky. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in the Human League, which wants to kick out all the aliens from the sector. But I mean, they kind of just real briefly touch on that kind of stuff, but they don't really go into it to make it, like you said, it could have been a little bit more interesting.
It could have been. Well, either way, let's move past that, move on to our episode spotlight.
It's time for this episode's spotlight.
So our episode spotlight is kind of something we even sort of brought up a little bit. We're going to just, the episode spotlights the Corellian sector because we haven't heard much about it, and this is the first time we get to have it expanded upon. And it is kind of I don't want to say it's presented in a shroud of, or whatever, shroud of mystery, however you say that, before this. But Han doesn't really ever talk about it, and we get to finally see some things in there this time around.
Yeah. So there's some of this that Roger McBride Allen came up with on his own, and there's some other aspects of it that he is just expanding upon that people dropped little tidbits here and there throughout various different books and comics and stuff like that. I will say, before we dive into it a little bit, the Corellian Sector and Corellia, the way it's kind of portrayed here versus the movie Solo in the Disney canon, is a little bit different. With in Solo, they're getting the, you know, Star Destroyers being built, and it's like a real manufacturing hub and stuff like that. Whereas in this, it's kind of more of your basic terrestrial type of, you know, planet, like common type of planet. But anyway, so there's the five brothers is what we come to learn in the Corellian Sector. So there's five planets that support life.
Five planets.
And it's Corellia, Solonia, Drawl, Tallis, and Trollis. And Tallis and Trollis, I guess, orbit each other.
Yeah.
So they're like twins. So you want to talk a little bit? There's two main species that we get to learn about in this book.
Two main species outside of humans.
Yes, correct.
So the first are the Solonians, who you can tell by their name live on Tallis, I assume. No, they're Solonians, and they're bipedal like humans. They have fur, brown or black fur. They're taller. And then you get to learn a little bit about them. You learn that the only ones you really see out in public are sterile females. The rest stay in the den performing, you know, duties, keeping the den going. But they're kind of the face of them, I guess. If you're going to see one, that's what it's going to be. I think probably not surprisingly, they can fight. They're going to fight you. If you want to fight them, you're going to lose probably.
Yeah.
But you kind of see about them, and you will hear more about them moving forward, but interact with them more moving forward, I guess I should say. But we learn about them a little bit there. And then we have the Drawl. Short, furry, stocky, also bipedal like humans. And they're highly dignified. I kind of want to think maybe they even might think they're a little better than a lot of other
snooty
things out there. And one thing about stuff like this in Star Wars that makes it so fun is we were joking around about the Life Witch earlier, and why is that in there? Well, it was in there to fill pages, it feels like, and probably because Lando can't have the first one he meets. But that's one of the coolest things about Star Wars. You have the Life Witch and then these couple species is you can have all these different species and introduce them as one-offs if you want to, or they can be, you know, fleshed out later on. And so it's always kind of neat, no matter what the story is, what you think of the story. In this case, I wasn't a big fan of it. But any time where they're going to talk about new species, I do enjoy that.
Because
it's neat. It's neat to see their characteristics. I like to see how they differentiate them between species and, you know, how they're slightly different than humans. And they may have a different family dynamic than humans do or whatever it may be. Even if they look human, they're going to be slightly different. All that stuff, I just think it's really... I do always enjoy that because it's one of those things where you yourself can let your imagination run wild.
Right.
All right. So now we're going to move past that. Now, this part I was kind of excited about. We kind of talked about the political intrigue that this book was supposed to... Or what we thought this book should have some political intrigue and doesn't feel like it has much. But we're going to move on to our Roll the Dice segment.
Tell me, how do you feel about 45-year-old virgins who still live with their parents?
Comb the sweet tarts out of your beard and you're on.
Grab your tower. It's time to roll the dice.
And we talked about how that political intrigue could make for a really fun game, though. And I couldn't really think of what to call it so much, and doesn't just talk about it being political intrigue, because you could have like a resistance-type cell that's out doing things to try to make commotion, make noise, get the government to do that, but nobody... We just don't really want to play as terrorists necessarily, but you're going to be kind of, if you did that in a game, you could be kind of doing things that would seem sort of terroristic, because you could go out and bomb things and things like that, and the way to get around that in a game could be really cool. I'd have to sneak around to accomplish your goal. I just really think having a group set about trying to make a difference on a planet or in a country or in a city with these kind of tactics would make for a very interesting game.
Yeah. And you were talking about terrorists. Well, like the rebels themselves
were terrorists. Yeah.
They were terrorists.
Yeah, they were.
But yeah, it's kind of interesting. Leia talked about in this book when she's talking to Janet and Jason about, you know, the political climate of Corellia and everything, about how they're going to try to make it harder for the bad guys to keep doing their bad guy stuff in this, you know, through this trade summit. So they're going to try to put some tariffs on them or something, I guess. You know, sounds like super boring stuff. And like you were saying, you probably don't want that to be the center point of your campaign unless you're totally down for a game like that.
Yes.
But
although playing that might be way more fun than reading about it.
Yeah, that's true. And one way to play through that kind of stuff is, you know, with the Fantasy Flight Games version, you've got the social encounters that you can do. And then through the SOG edition, the Wizards of the Coast version of the role-playing game, you can do, you know, skill challenges.
Skill challenges.
And the Galaxy of Intrigue source book breaks all that down if you want, like, a super detailed list of how to go about doing a political skill challenge. It's all in there.
Well, you know, and one thing I always like playing RPGs is if you're going to have, when your group has a set goal in mind, I can give an example. When we played G.I. Joe that one weekend, you know, and I know obviously anybody listening to this was probably not there, but we had to, at one point we were going to essentially attack an island, right? We sat there for like 2 hours and planned our attack out. It was very convoluted and was an absolute mess with what we finally came up with to do. But it was so much fun. The actual planning of how we are going to get from point A to point B or accomplish this task. Get from point A to point B and accomplish these things. Planning it out was just as much fun as actually doing it. And this kind of game would give you all sorts of opportunity of, if you are going to have to, I said bomb something, so I'll say plant a bomb at some government thing, whatever it may be, example, you're going to spend a lot of time, it's like, we got to sneak around, get this bomb in there, get it set it off with our cell phones or however we're doing it, whatever works in Star Wars. You're going to spend a lot of time, just the players themselves are going to spend a lot of time talking amongst themselves of how to do it. And it's going to be, that's going to be as much fun as anything.
Right.
It always is. Planning is so much fun in those games, to just sit there and talk about what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And how it's all going to go off without a hitch.
And that's the thing. That's what's fun for the GM is it doesn't always go that way.
And then as the GM, you know, you don't have to purposely throw a hitch in there.
Oh, no.
Because a dice roll is not going to go right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may roll nat 20s the whole way or a bunch of triumphs the whole way, but you're probably not gonna.
Right.
And that's what makes it fun.
Exactly.
So I think this would lend itself to that.
One more thing we should say before we move on from the roll the dice segment. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Fantasy Flight Games Sons of Fortune book. It is the source book for the Corellian sector. So if you want to play games in this setting where this trilogy of novels takes place, it's got everything you could possibly imagine for the detail, the setting, the species we mentioned earlier, how they interact with each other, and all of that good stuff. If you want to play a game in this setting, go pick up the Sons of Fortune Edge of the Empire book.
Agreed. Okay, now it's the time. We have to rate this sucker. So we need to give it a severed limb rating. What do you give it?
I'm going to give this the same thing that I gave the Crystal Star, because I think they're equally not interesting. I'm giving it 2 severed limbs out of 5 severed limbs. There's just not much there. There's a lot of these books, like we mentioned earlier, that we haven't read before. There's a lot that we have read before. This is one that we haven't. I'm probably never going to go back and revisit this book ever again.
Ever. Awesome. Okay, well, I when I rated the Crystal Star, I gave it a very enthusiastic 2. because as much as it really wasn't very good, it was fine. And one thing I think the Crystal Star had over this, it was longer, but even that, it still didn't feel like it had as much just straight filler in it. It still felt like it was trying to get to the end of the story. This book, we brought up the Life Witch thing, even though the Life Witch itself is interesting, it's still filler. Luke and Lando's entire purpose in this book feels like filler. It's just kind of there. Is it going to have a payoff? I'm sure. Lando will, I know who Lando eventually marries. I assume you probably do too. Right. So I don't know. I guess this is where he must meet her. Sounds good. Maybe he already met her in the first book. I don't even remember. I was zoning out a lot reading this sucker. But anyway, I gave that an enthusiastic 2. I'm going to give this a very unenthusiastic 1. It was miserable. I hated every second of it. Like I said, what I didn't like about the book was 306 out of the 308 pages. And I'm not sure what those 2 pages were that I did like. The beginning and the end, when it said, "Welcome to Star Wars, awesome." And in the end where it said, "We're going to finally, slowly, peacefully let you out of your misery. You can go now." I didn't like it. Ugh. Whatever. Moving on.
Hey, they can't all be. I mean, you had mentioned this to me before that we're kind of in what a lot of people consider as a real low point of Legends.
Yeah.
We're right in the middle of it right now.
We just need to keep reading Tales of the Jedi.
Yeah. It's hard to plow through some of this stuff.
It is.
But,
And the thing about it is, even when it's hard to plow through, making fun of it and stuff, set that aside for a second, just because even when you're plowing through, there's still going to be some stuff in there that is maybe going to be pertinent later on, or still setting something up, or is still interesting, like Leia's ruby red lightsaber. That's weird. The fact that they keep building Anakin up, things like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's still all, that in itself is still kind of interesting. But either way, it gets a 1. That's going to walk away from this. Probably what happens is I swung at it with my ruby red lightsaber, and the person was like, you're not a Sith. You can't have one of those, and the thing just malfunctioned. I didn't cut any limbs off. It's probably fine. I threw the hilt at him and ran away. Hit him in the cheek, and they got a scratch. It's awful. Anyway, that's it. We're done.
Well, wrapping this up, you can find Guardians of the Wills on iTunes, Stitcher, thestaggeringdragon.com, and d20radio.com. You can email us at thestaggeringdragonllc@gmail.com, and be sure to like us on Facebook. And we always encourage you guys to leave us comments and feedback and let us know what you thought of Ambush at Corellia, Neil's favorite book he's ever read.
Unless you disagree with us, don't let us know. No, obviously, that's the only time, not the only time, but it's more fun if people obviously disagree. Hopefully, this was your favorite book of all time and you're just seething. I want to defend it so bad. Anyhow, next time we talk to you, we will continue the Corellian trilogy with our discussion of Assault at Salonia, also by Roger McBride Allen.
He's still writing.
He's still working on it. Oh, well. Bye-bye.
And may the force of others be with you.
You've been listening to the Guardians of the Wills podcast. This podcast is not affiliated with Disney or Lucasfilm and is meant for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Flesh and blood.